Disclaimer. The views and opinions you hear expressed by the participants in this show are not the views of AnimeNewsNetwork.com. Enjoy the show. I think you will. Welcome to Ancast. I'm Zach Birchie. We have a, well, partial reteaming of the Super Nerds. Justin could not be here. He has a social life. And one of these things I've heard about, but I've never experienced myself. So joining me today, I'm very happy to have these guys back on the show. From the Anime World Order podcast and Otaku USA magazine, it's Daryl Surratt. Daryl, thanks for coming on the show.
Well, glad to be back. Just got a new episode of my own show out as well, so it's good timing.
There you go. You can promote that here. and, of course, as always, from various places around the internet and, of course, our own Mike Tool show, it's Mike Tool. Mike, thanks for coming on.
Oh, glad to be here as well. And, you know, I've had a very busy summer. I don't know about you guys. Plenty to talk about. I will say that Justin was also not on the last Super Nerd show. He got KO'd by allergies. And now he's not on this one either. I think he's been replaced by a robot. That's what I think.
Well, yeah, maybe we need to bring in a fifth person to sort of fill in for Justin when he can't make it. I guess it's sort of an increasing trend. Mm-hmm. I forgot that he wasn't on the last one, too. That's interesting. maybe a pattern. Anyway, we haven't had one of these in like a long time. So it's been a while. I'm curious, what have you guys been up to? We usually start just by talking about sort of the media that we've crammed down our throats in the last few months. And I guess let's start with stuff that's not anime. So we'll get to anime in a little bit. But Mike, have you seen any like movies lately?
Oh, sure. Well, let's see. In theaters, there was about a month ago, I saw The Man from U.N.C.L.E., which was a really entertaining movie. Plot-wise, kind of weak, but had fantastic actors, great chemistry, really good action set pieces. My favorite part of it, though, was the way the director, Guy Ritchie, filmed it. It's very colorful. It looks like a 60s travelogue film.
Yeah, I was surprised by it, too. I also saw it, highly enjoyed it. I tend to like Guy Ritchie in general, maybe not the swept away Kabbalah era. But as far as Man from U.N.C.L.E., I was really impressed at how well he did making it look like a 60s period piece. And that may have been what did the movie in, because it looks like an old movie. Plus, half the movie is subtitled in English.
Yeah, they're very bold about just like, no, this is a movie that takes place in far off foreign lands. You know, not everyone speaks English all the time. And it's so cool. And, you know, it's for something that's based on an old TV show that was itself pretty neat. You know, it's very original. So, of course, no one saw it. Everyone went to see Straight Outta Compton instead, which I also saw. That was an interesting movie. Zach, you saw that as well. What did you think of that?
I will say that, and I will get to that in a second, but on The Man from U.N.C.L.E., I only know what that is because my dad watched it, and he had like a replica gun from The Man from U.N.C.L.E.?
Oh, he had the U.N.C.L.E. gun.
Yeah.
The pistol that you could turn into a sniper rifle?
Yes, he had that. The thing is, nobody fucking knows what The Man from U.N.C.L.E. is, and if you just look at that, you're like, The Man from U.N.C.L.E.? What? Like, that title doesn't fucking mean anything.
Well, Zach, come on. I'm pretty sure you can get the complete Man from U.N.C.L.E. on DVD from Time Life Books.
I'm sure you can.
That's right.
I think the
key thing from our listeners of this podcast to realize is that Guy Ritchie does the anime male-on-male rivalry / they secretly want to bang relationship better than anybody working in the blockbuster film industry. He did two Sherlock Holmes movies, Rock and Rolla, now this, just goes down the line. And so if you're into that, this is the movie for you of the year.
So he makes Fujoshi movies, but maybe doesn't know it.
Yes. Yeah. It's what we call the 80s style homoeroticism, where they aren't explicitly going for it necessarily, but it's there in spades.
Yeah. Well, I mean, remember, and we have to remember that Guy Ritchie, of course, is incredibly influential on anime. You know, it's not just the opening. I think Bakano in general is very informed by both Snatch and Lockstock.
Yeah,
especially in terms of editing.
Yeah, editing and narrative style, absolutely.
Yeah, I mean, Guy Ritchie was in movie jail for a long time. I mean, Daryl, you referenced the Kabbalah swept away period. That's when he was married to Madonna.
And oh, yeah, that's when he made Revolver. Did anyone even – I couldn't stay
awake.
Oh,
I saw Revolver, and I saw the full uncut version of Revolver as opposed to the more palatable-for-here version of Revolver that's still brutal.
Yeah, yeah. That's like I couldn't believe just how dull and boring, you know, a Guy Ritchie gangster movie could be. But there it was.
Yeah, he was in movie jail for a long time, and then Sherlock Holmes was a big hit, and then Sherlock Holmes, the sequel, was not as big a hit. And, like, it did okay, but it underperformed, I think, and so he kind of went back to movie jail for a little while. Yeah. Then Man from U.N.C.L.E. tanked, and I don't know if he's now going to be in movie jail again.
Yeah.
I have no idea, but it'll be interesting to watch. But Straight Outta Compton was a really entertaining movie, like, wildly entertaining. I was on the edge of my seat, like, just gripped. And it's like 2.5 hours long, but I was riveted the whole time. I mean, there was some, like, okay, so I know, like, not a ton. I would like to say I'm informed about that period of history. I've read, there's a book. If there isn't a book, I have read so many Rolling Stones articles about that, that.
I remember that whole thing vividly, right down to, you know, Kurt Loder on MTV News saying, "This with attitude," in his voice.
Oh, thanks, Mike. I got to bleep that now. And there was some stuff that was left out. I don't, like, it was obviously this movie is sanctioned by Cube and Dre. And so you're not going to see all the hideous and terrible things that they did to, say, women.
There's some serious myth-making going on there.
Yeah.
At the same time, Ice Cube's kid there was kind of a revelation.
As playing his dad, I don't think that that doesn't mean he's a great actor, but I'm curious
to
see. Well,
if he's playing somebody who himself is not that great of an actor, as anyone who saw XXX2 State of the Union can attest.
Yeah. Oh, right. Oh, I forgot that was him. Anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it was, like, from a biopic kind of standpoint, it was really, really entertaining, and what it made me want was a Biggie and Tupac movie that is set, using the same thing. The thing is, I think Suge Knight will have to be dead before they make that movie.
Yeah,
I don't think he would allow it to be made, or whoever decided to direct it would get killed.
There was a movie called Notorious a couple of years ago.
Yeah, that wasn't the same.
I don't think that was quite what you're looking for.
It's not what I'm talking about. The thing is, the thing I loved in the movie is that every time Suge Knight is around, they should have been playing some kind of Jaws, like, menacing. That guy seemed like somehow the danger, that guy is incredibly dangerous, and, like, on screen, whoever they got to play him did a fantastic job seeming extremely menacing, even when he's just standing there.
Just standing there or hanging out, you know, having something to eat.
Glowering,
Just that kind of, you know, squinting yet pop-eyed glare that he did was amazing.
Yeah, it's...
But yeah, I would love a West Coast hip hop cinematic universe. That would be pretty amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I guess they're talking about gonna make a Snoop and Dre and Tupac movie that sort of covers that period. And now they're like, oh, let's make a Run DMC biopic too. So I guess there's gonna be a bunch of stuff. But yeah, it was really good. I mean, the funny thing is I kind of love it. He used to be sort of like an Oscar kind of actor, at least for like a year or two. Now he's just Paul Giamatti in every movie.
Oh, yeah.
He just shows up and he's Paul Giamatti.
You went Shoot 'Em Up. That was the breaking point.
Yeah. Well, after he made Shoot 'Em Up, then he was Prince John in Ironclad. And that was that was the point of no return there.
Yeah.
And then Spider-Man 2, you know, amazing. Yeah. You know, he was just Paul Giamatti-ing it up.
Did either of you see San Andreas?
No. I was intending to, and then it just kind of came and went from the theater, and I missed it.
Okay, well, that is a wildly entertaining, terrible disaster movie. I was so entertained, laughing the whole way through. Like, you will enjoy it. It is painfully dumb, but you will enjoy it. Anyway, Paul Giamatti plays the scientist in that movie, whose job it is to warn everyone. And he just...
The fault is going to erupt.
Yeah, there's a scene where he has to look right into the camera and just look scared. it looked right in the camera and looked really scared, and I laughed out loud because it's Paul Giamatti just trying his hardest. Anyway,
when that movie comes out on Blu-ray, you have to clip that as the animated GIF reaction shot and post it everywhere without context.
Anyway, the reason I bring it up is because he plays the sleazy manager in Straight Outta Compton. And I was also watching the Brian Wilson biopic recently, the Beach Boys guy, and he plays basically the same character in a bad wig. So I guess sleazy manager is like the Paul Giamatti role.
Yeah. See, that just makes me want to take both of those films and try to edit them together into a supercut.
Yeah. Anyway, it was a really good movie. Daryl, I don't imagine you saw that.
I didn't see it just because even though I grew up around that time and saw all those news items, I'm not familiar enough with the music just because I don't listen to any music. It's not like a anti-rap sort of thing. I just don't listen to really music in general. So
now, Daryl, you have to say that you like everything except rap and
except
country.
Rap and country. That's right. That's the way that you have to put in your Facebook profile.
Yeah.
And the anime is the rap and country of geek media.
You're kind of right. You know, the number of people who make exception for that, and they're like, well, I'm not into Star Trek or anime, but I really love Star Wars, you know, that kind of thing.
But yeah, I mean, it was interesting to watch because at least, you know, in my growing up, that stuff was so pervasive that, like, you know, we would listen to that NWA record on the school bus.
Right. Yeah,
you know,
I remember that.
You know, white kids in the suburbs in the eighth grade. It was like, nope, that was what we were singing along to.
Yeah,
I was always a fan of the cut of the album that was just the profanity.
Yes, that's a good thing. I've got that on my iPod, definitely.
Well, you were mentioning like growing up with that stuff back then. I don't know if people listening to this are younger, but back then, before the internet, having gangsta, if you were like a kid growing up and you had hardcore gangster rap like tapes. That was the music equivalent of having like Playboys. You had to hide it from your parents.
Yep.
It was like the Playboy you found in the woods. Sometimes you would also find a copy of Straight Outta Compton out there.
Yeah. You would have to get the CDs on the sly from the one record clerk who would sell them to you, and then you would have to dub them onto cassettes and mislabel the cassettes so they wouldn't be found.
Oh, in my growing up, there was one guy whose parents didn't care, and we all copied his albums, right. And then you put something else on the tape, like Aladdin soundtrack or something like that, and your parents don't know. But
right, so that and like the Adam Sandler comedy CD, they're all gonna laugh at you, and that like yeah. are the two on each side.
Yep.
Oh.
Yeah. Anyway, sorry. I go on.
Yeah, and in addition to that, I've kind of rediscovered the magic of my local public library, which actually has a really strong DVD and Blu-ray section. So I've seen a lot of great trash lately. I watched Taken 3, which has but is mostly garbage.
That Olivier Megaton should never be allowed to make a movie.
No, he cannot. It's
he
like
ruins he, movies.
If you do the editing, you know, the film school editing exercise of counting 1/1000 after every cut, you never make it through an entire 1/1000 in his movies, like hardly ever.
Wow.
He is constantly cutting and cutting and cutting and cutting shit.
And he has no perception of like how to depict spatial relations between people and objects. And so this is a terrible choice for a film director, but he must work cheap.
Yeah, it's like you're trying to watch this action scene. You're trying to watch a fight, but a gunfight with Liam Neeson and the bad guys. You have no idea where they are in relation to each other. You just
can't
tell.
There's a chase. Liam Neeson's running. Cut to somebody else running. There's no landmarks or anything to convey how far away are they from one another exactly. You know, these are basic, you know, visual language issues that the man just does not grasp, and it's a shame.
It also does the, you know, the hoary old trick of the whole, oh, well, you know, Liam Neeson's not mad enough yet. We have to kill a woman.
Oh, God. So that's just really hacky start to finish.
Yeah, I saw, you know, for cultural literacy's sake, I've been watching those Divergent movies. So I just saw the second one of those. Those are also just kind of puzzlingly terrible to me. I have no idea why they're so popular, but
because you're not a teenager.
I know.
You're not a special teen in the oppressive government run by the evil adults that you have to overthrow, which is the plot of all these friggin' movies.
Where all of society is separated into the cliques from high school.
Yeah, I've only seen the first one, and it was so transparently it was such a badly written, transparent metaphor for high school that I and they had the like absolutely absurd like oh, you don't fit into any one of these. You're divergent. And it's like, yeah, everybody's fucking divergent.
You picked a special hat, Harry.
Yeah, well, see, I haven't read the books, but the films do such an incredibly bad job of trying to define that.
Yeah.
All we ever hear is just like, well, you know, she's special. It's like, but how?
Yeah, it's the Twilight thing.
Special in an undefinable way, just like all teens, Mike.
It's the Twilight thing where you don't ever understand why everybody is going so crazy over this boring girl.
Yeah.
Or the harem anime.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's the same thing. Yeah.
Anyway, that was it was a piece of crap, and I will definitely watch the next one when it comes out on Blu-ray. I just saw 302.
Which, oh, geez.
I'll say this. It's not really a good movie, but thematically and visually, it fits right in with the first one. If you like the first one and you just want more of that shit, yeah, it delivers. It absolutely does it.
I thought
I wasn't like, it wasn't like offensively poor to me, I thought. I thought it was like fine, nothing to really write home about. And I think what really did it in is just that it was more of the same of 300, which came several years prior to that and has since been copied and recopied to infinity.
And, you know, the character Themistocles is just not as interesting as Leonidas was. You know?
Well, that's Ava Green's movie.
Yeah, I know. That's the other thing, as I was going to say. It's just like, it's not even really his movie. It's not, you know, Sullivan Stapledon just kind of stands around and says stuff. Ava Green steals the movie.
Yeah, she's just Nicolas Caging it up throughout the entire picture.
Totally.
I thought that movie, the letdown for me on that one was that it looked much cheaper and shittier, I thought, than the first one did. I thought that the second 300 movie looked like a Big Lots version of 300.
I think they both looked cheap and shitty.
Okay. So. The first one doesn't look great.
They both are filmed in one room against a green screen box. So,
I think the compositing on the first one maybe was a little bit better, but whatever. They're both corny ass action movies. The second one, like, has some enjoyable stuff in it. It's definitely not boring. The plot's a little, it's all over the place because it's like a prequel
and
a sequel.
You know, full-on Frank the Tank mode.
Yeah.
But, I mean, the thing is, I was you know, not disappointed just because usually sequels like that, even if they get to theaters, tend to be pretty terrible. Like I said, this is, you know, it's not bad. It's just, you know, the material it's coming from isn't that good. But like I said, if you like 300 and want more, it kept me watching. I saw the Kingsman movie, which was good, but a little too self-aware, I thought.
That's the thing about all these Mark Millar films that kind of get on my nerves. He's a very transparent, like, I'm writing this comic just to get it made into a movie, and it works for him every time. He's like, it's very cynical, and like, his writing isn't very good. And it's one of those things where the comics are never that particularly good, and the movies are always far better than the source material. Mm-hmm. So that's not to say that the movies are necessarily all that great, but they're leagues better than the source material if you go back to it. And like, Kingsman is kind of just more of the same.
I think part of the problem with Kingsman, at least from my experience, was that all my comic nerd buddies were like, oh, this is so great. You're going to love it. It's hilarious. And when it was over, I was just like, oh, that's it? Like, that was pretty good.
I turned it off. I got about 10 minutes into it and said, this is winking too much to be enjoyable for me, and the special effects don't look good, and I'm not like charmed by the idea of like British gentlemen. I think that's like a completely overdone nerd thing at this point. Obsession with Tia Bustoff, obsession with British people. It just didn't do it for me at all. And I was like, I'm not going to get
Mark Millar is now the man who's being put in charge of like establishing some cinematic universe. So look forward to more.
What? Which one?
I can't remember right now. I would have to look it up.
Hopefully it's shit I don't care about.
Yeah. And the last couple of non-anime media crap I've been into lately is I also from the library got the first season, which turned out to actually be the second season of a Cinemax television series called Strike Back. It's a pretty by the numbers political thriller with lots of great action scenes and hammy acting and lots of gratuitous sex scenes. I enjoy it.
Oh yeah, I it's basically the British equivalent of 24. I've been a fan of it for several years. The latest season 5, it's a show that's sort of worn out its welcome or kind of run out of steam. I know a lot of people did not like the very dramatic change between season 1 and season 2 because some of the actors got a little too famous. But So I think though it's great. Huge budget. Filmed on location in, you know, various places. I think South Africa is probably the first season.
Yeah, they do a lot of filming in South Africa, at least through the season I watched. It's, you know, it's pretty cool. And the last thing that I just finished the second season of is BoJack Horseman, which I quite like.
Okay, I assume that gets better because I watched the first episode and thought this is really not anything special at all. Like, I was not taken with it whatsoever.
Yeah, I watch it with my wife, and you know, the way it kind of fell into our consciousness was we just started watching it because it was there on Netflix,
right?
And powered through the first few episodes. You know, it survives at first largely just on like on Will Arnett's performance and Amy Sedaris as you know, his on again off again girlfriend. They're really funny. They're the only good part of the first couple of episodes. But once it gets going and gets a little momentum, it's really good. It's got some really funny dark comedy to it. A lot of pathos too. It's genuinely difficult to watch some parts. It's a very sad show at times.
Yeah, apparently it's like a funnier show if you are a person or know somebody who has depression. Then this is the show for you. That's what I keep hearing.
Yeah.
Oh. I guess I'll keep watching then, because the first episode really put me off. It seemed like a sort of Me Too, trying to be a late night, you know, adult comedy cartoon thing. Like, but you know, riffing on show business for the 100 billionth time. Like, it seemed totally pat to me. But I guess I'll watch a few more.
Well, then, you know, I like the fact that, you know, there's the fact that some of the characters are you know, anthropomorphic animals. They riff on that endlessly and in really clever ways. That always keeps me laughing. And I think the opening of that show is possibly the best American cartoon opening ever, like right up there with the Flintstones and the Simpsons.
It was just like having like the weird drug haze.
Yeah, he's just wandering around in this absolute, you know, drug-induced stupor. But yeah, like everything else, that took a while to grow on me, but now I really appreciate it, and I'm glad we're going to get some more of that, because season two doesn't quite wind things up, so I hope it keeps going, and I hope it ends in a satisfying way. But that's all the crap I've been watching.
Huh. All right. Daryl?
Well, I've mostly been, as far as non-anime stuff, been going to the theater, catching the major releases and that sort of thing. I think maybe the last one I might have seen that hasn't already been mentioned was I did see the new Mission Impossible, which was quite good. I think personally I prefer Ghost Protocol by Brad Bird. It's just a difference in direction. I've been a fan of Christopher McQuarrie for several years. Pretty underrated guy.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought that this movie, as far as a follow-up, it's like the first one of these movies, it's actually in some ways like a direct sequel as far as like following up on Ghost Protocol like immediately. And so I liked it. Really impressive stunt work, especially when you consider like how bizarrely old Tom Cruise is. Like, this guy is not nearly as young as you think he is. And
about 52, 53 at this point.
Yep. And it's hard to wrap my mind around the fact that the first Mission Impossible movie with him came out in 1996, which is like 20 years ago almost at this point. Mm-hmm. But no, they keep knocking them out of the park. I think it was great. It was a lot of fun. But yeah, I think I did think, as far as like just pure enjoyment, like start to finish, Man from U.N.C.L.E. was like, you know, a really good time. And then, of course, let's see. What did I see before that? Actually, no. Dragon Ball doesn't count because that is anime. And how dare we talk about the Japanese animation here on ANNcast. But yeah, a lot of the trash like I had meant to go see, I just didn't go see it. Like, I was like, oh, I'm totally going to see this new Hitman movie to see how much better and or worse it could possibly be than the last one. Then I didn't go.
Yeah, I wanted to see that. I wanted to see the terrible new Transporter movie. I just haven't had time.
Man, I saw We Are Your Friends.
Oh, God. See, I hardly know a thing about that other than the fact that it set a new record for bad box office opening. So what is the deal with that movie?
It's kind of a movie for no one. It's not a bad movie. It's silly, and it has a weird final act. But it's an inspirational DJ movie. I know it sounds fucking horrible, but that's why I went to see it, because I just had to know.
Right.
It's directed by the other guy from the Catfish TV show. Not Neve, not the main guy, the other guy. And he's a charming person on that show. Hope and I watch that together. And so I was like, I'll watch your movie. I'll see it. And it's Zac Efron is a listless 20-something who was somehow not... Somehow in Los Angeles, someone who looks like Zac Efron did not manage to become an actor or something else. And he wants to be an EDM DJ who plays festivals. And
So we got
to
make Tim Maughan see this movie for sure.
Yeah, I was joking about that with him. He basically, he shacks up... Well, he kind of hooks up with a producer, a DJ who's kind of past his prime and is now an alcoholic and is sort of coasting on his previous fame. He sort of takes him in, teaches him how to be a DJ. It's a goofy movie, but it's very entertaining, at least for the first, like, hour. I wasn't bored. It doesn't have much of any...
How long's the
movie? It doesn't really have anything to say. Like, when you see crowd footage, it's like an American Apparel ad mashed up with slow-motion crowd footage from an EDM festival. So, like, all those people that you see dancing to electronic music, like, in Ibiza, for some reason they thought, we could get all of those people to see a movie, couldn't we? Turns out, no, you can't. And who are those people anyway? What do they want? It's kind of a misfire, but that's the only, like, thing I went to the theater to see that was like, I bet this is going to be pretty bad. And it turns out it wasn't. It was just kind of a movie made for no one, released in the dead of summer with not much advertising behind it. And that's why no one saw it, I guess.
So you have this amazing experience where you're seeing it on opening weekend and you're like the only person in the theater.
Oh, no, I went like 2 weeks after it opened.
Oh, okay.
And I just needed to get out of the house.
Yeah.
And this wasn't like appointment viewing. I was like, I should get out of the house. I'll see that movie no one saw. And the theater was like half full.
Interesting.
I was shocked. I mean, I was there on $5 day. So
okay, well, maybe that helped.
Maybe that was it. But we contributed about like probably about $100 to to the final gross of that movie.
Well, all right.
But anyway, so Daryl, you skipped all the junk, huh?
Yeah, normally I would. This is like the time, like the end of summer, like dumping ground for things. But I guess I've just been busy with other stuff.
Yeah.
Or actually, it's probably, I'll tell you what it really is. I can't find other people willing to go with me anymore.
Oh, okay.
Everybody's started families or gotten in relationships and blah, blah, blah. And nobody has time to.
That's right. So
junk food and cinema form.
So if you're listening and you know you're a curmudgeonly nerd in the Fort Lauderdale area, go to the movies with Daryl Surratt. It's only $10 an hour.
The thing for me is with a lot of the junk, the DVD window is so short now that if I just wait a month and a half, 2 months,
yeah, seriously,
the junk will be out and then I don't have to pay, because like Hope and I go to the movies, it's $30. It's basically $30.
Oh, okay, it's way more expensive by you then.
Yeah. Yeah. So
that's like $8 a ticket here.
Yeah. I mean, I could go to the $5 shows every time, but we have one of those theaters with giant red recliners and they bring food to your table and stuff. Like, it's fantastic. And that's like $13 a ticket. So we go to that. But even then, $5, $10 to watch a piece of shit that is just going to be out on video in 2 months. Nah, man.
Video sometimes is more expensive than the ticket.
I still use Redbox. It's a dollar.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I said earlier, I discovered how good my library was.
Right.
When a film I want to see is about to come out on video, I'll go to the catalog, I'll place a hold on it, and within about a week or two after it comes out and is at the library, they'll have pulled it for me.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. So I try to just see stuff that I'm legitimately interested in. But yeah. So anything else, TV or otherwise?
Narcos on Netflix.
Is that
anyone watching? It's one of these things. It's all about the life of Pablo Escobar, mm-hmm. who's like a notorious drug dealer. And it's one of those things that just if you think like Al Capone was this badass dude, like they don't even need to make stuff up about the life of Pablo Escobar to make this thing like weirdly fascinating, because it's got a lot of really strong actors. Like I'm kind of got a weak spot for Luis Guzman. And he's, course, in Narcos, because whenever you have some sort of movie about, like, drug cartel people, you got to get Luis Guzman in there.
Right.
But, yeah, I mean, it's good. I don't want to talk too much about it, but of course, it's pretty much based on the guy's real life. So,
he's
going to commit some crazy acts, and you're going to like, did this happen for real? And the answer is yes.
I'm assuming, Daryl, that if you're like me and you, I'm pretty sure, and saw the documentary, the two Escobars,
the 30 for 30, or
that'll set you up pretty well for this show.
Yeah, I think so.
Okay. Right. Yeah, Two Escobars was my favorite film of 2010. Great documentary.
Yeah, that's good. I should revisit that if I'm going to watch the show.
Yeah, and that just came out on Netflix like within the last few days, so there's probably some people who are either still watching through it or are waiting to get through their other Netflix queue items before starting it.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to see Black Mass tomorrow, and everyone's saying,
I am really looking forward to that one as well.
Yeah. Me too, man. That was filmed right down the street from my house.
Oh, really? That's
yep,
fun.
Yep.
That's fun.
I mean, I'm hoping it's going to be good. Ridley Scott. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm not Ridley Scott. I'm getting ahead of myself because that's my thoughts on the other movie that I'm going to see later this year. But no, Black Mass is the Johnny Depp, Whitey Bulger movie, correct?
Yeah. And everyone's saying, like, great performances, and this guy led a really interesting life. It's a shame that this movie is kind of uninteresting. So I have limited expectations, but I'm pretty sure Johnny Depp wanted an Oscar for this, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Johnny Depp needs to kind of bounce back after his last three or four.
Ugh. You're telling me, man.
I didn't see any of those pieces of crap.
I did.
Yeah. Yeah. I know
definitely
you
did not.
I'll never fucking forgive him for Mordecai. I just won't. Like, at this point, it's just he's half man, half monster to me forever. I think you guys pretty much mentioned everything that I've been seeing. But I did want to talk a little bit because, you know, before we get to anime, we've been playing anime in the form of Metal Gear Solid V, The Phantom Pain. Daryl, I know you're on top of this.
Yeah, I am. I'm on top of it in the sense that I'm very slowly playing through it.
Yeah,
I've put a lot of time into it, but I haven't beaten the game, so I don't want to know any plot details or anything because I've probably spent like 75 hours and I'm on mission like 15.
Yeah, okay, I'm a little further. I'm on mission like 18.
Well, so, you nerds can talk that up as much as you want. I'm playing a real man's game, Mario Maker.
I'm playing that too. That is, let me tell you, that is like the best $60 think I've spent. Like,
I was never sure because the thing with games like Mario Maker and Little Big Planet is they depend entirely on the other people who bought the game and what they make.
Okay. To me, the big difference is, first of all, Little Big Planet's platforming is garbage. The controls are shit. This is Super Mario, which is the gold standard for that kind of stuff. So, yeah. In my experience, I will sit on the couch, I will turn on the 100 Mario Challenge, I pick a difficulty, either normal or expert. I was just doing expert before we started this. Mm-hmm. And then you just sit there, and if the level sucks, you hit the button and it brings you another one. Like, and there are enough good ones, and enough fun ones, and enough fun challenging ones. I haven't had this, like, frustrating experience where every level is garbage or whatever. Generally, they're pretty good. Like, yeah, the way the game is structured, it's perfect. Like, I couldn't have
asked for
better.
What's the rate of penises
thing.
Encountered?
Zero, because Nintendo Aww. Keeps that shit on lock.
Yeah, Nintendo doesn't let that shit stick around.
Yeah.
I think there was one level that was, all the level was just in blocks spelled out, I love titties.
Mm-hmm.
That made it pretty far up the charts before they noticed it and got rid of it.
Yeah.
You have to kind of make it like Bush did 9/11 or something like that. And then.
Yeah.
Yeah, that might make it in. But no, yeah, my experience with Mario Maker has been, I don't sit down and play it for hours, but it guarantees that I play it for 30 or 40 minutes every single day.
Yeah.
So do you guys make levels with it, or are you solely just checking out what people made?
I'm checking out what people made. I'm working on them, but the elements and design elements are time released. You have to play it and enjoy it and get into it before you're allowed to really flex the full powers of the engine. So I'm waiting on releasing some levels.
Yeah, I made one and uploaded it just yesterday. Actually, that was the only one I've made. The rest of the time, I have just been playing other people's levels and really enjoying it. Like all the concerns that people have brought up about like shitty troll levels and stuff, for whatever reason, none of that bothers me. I just enjoy the shit out of sitting there going, The game could also be called, like, well, fuck this shit, because you get to some level and you're like, fuck this shit, and you go to the next thing. And that's on expert. Like, if you go to the expert thing, you are going to run into some of the most frustrating.
Yeah, but that's probably a lot of people making, like, their equivalent of the Japanese Mario 2 levels, only they're like, oh, that was too easy, so let me make a lot of invisible blocks that'll screw you over. And
so, hey, man.
Yeah.
Hey, man, I finished Japanese Super Mario 2, so yeah, this... There are levels in this one that, like, the jumping puzzles are just nirvana for me. I'll play them 50 times in a row to nail it.
Yeah, it's really, that game is a ton of fun. But Metal Gear Solid is excellent. Like, I've really been enjoying that game. I thought I was gonna get kind of bored with it, but it's so complex and deep and fun and just a really good time. This has been like the year of really just blowing past my expectations on, like, open world games.
Oh, yeah. Witcher 3 was, like, my dad spent, like, over 700 hours on that alone.
What? How is that possible?
Well, because he plays through them on, like, every difficulty and does, like, every branching thing. And, like, he's, like, also very slow as well. But, yeah, it's just, as far as a great open world, also excellent. But, yeah, for me, Metal Gear, it's fascinating because it's one of those few things where I can say – I've been following this for, like, over 18 years, like, more if you count the previous, like, to Metal Gear Solid era games. And I'm not disappointed. It's not like some of the things where you build up expectations so much in your mind and then the thing finally comes out and you're like, oh, it couldn't have, it just wasn't as good because nothing could have been as good as what I wanted it to be. And I'm not getting that impression from this. It's something that I would be playing right now if I were not recording this podcast.
Right. Yeah, it's just incredibly entertaining. I love the dog. The dog is fantastic.
They really force you to use that scary-ass looking dog because its abilities are just so great compared to everything else that's offered that it's like, oh, perfect radar.
That dog
that's what I need for this game. Also, the ability to just take people out immediately or distract them, et cetera, et cetera. This is like your walking stealth engine help mode is the dog.
Yeah, that dog is adorable, first of all. Not scary.
I am terrified of that dog.
It's cute dog.
If I saw that dog walking down the street, I would be like, oh my God, I am going to crap myself.
When I found out you can give the dog a sneaking suit, I was like, this is game of the year.
Oh yeah. Well, that game was the first thing I did was research the suit and then see, like, oh, it's got, like, cool stun shades as part of the sneaking suit.
Yeah. Your dog has a little visor and you can give him, like, a stun knife so he can take guys out and you can fulton him. Man, that game is a tremendous amount of fun. It's not as anime as the other Metal Gear games just because there aren't as many cutscenes, but what cutscenes there are Kojima anime as fuck, so it's still Metal Gear. Yeah, excellent stuff. Like, so many good games. That's been eating a lot of. I realized while I was sitting there playing Mario Maker, I'm like, you know, all of my hobbies involve sitting on my ass.
Yeah, that's what I said years ago. Like, every single thing that, like, really truly speaks to me involves sitting on my ass looking at a screen.
Yeah.
And either I'm interacting or not.
Yeah.
Guys, that's why I just got an elliptical.
Yeah, right. You just mentioned putting in exercise equipment, and I was like, coming soon to my apartment.
Yeah, I visited my mom's house last weekend, and she had a perfectly good elliptical that she had used once. And it's like, this cost me like $800, but I don't like it. Can you help me throw this away? And I was like, I'm taking that.
Yeah.
The secret to using the elliptical is that you can get a little stand and play DS on it as you're using the elliptical.
Oh, I can do that. I can watch anime. I mean, I am absolutely planning on ramping up to the point where I'm doing like 90 minutes, 2 hours of medium heavy cardio on that thing while I rip through shows.
Yeah, good idea.
Yeah.
So speaking of anime, let's talk about anime. I'm going to start on this one. The big thing that I watched was I got the Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust Blu-ray in.
Mike may know a thing about that.
Yeah. And I think the disc looks great given the production history of that film, mm-hmm. which was made to this incredibly weird, like, the production history of that film is, do you guys remember the, I can't remember who made it, but it was this big blue thing that you like hooked onto the back of your computer to like rip audio from VHS. It was like a Dazzle or something like that.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Dazzle. I remember the name of the company. They produced a lot of capture devices.
Yeah. Or like a zip drive. Like
Yeah.
Vampire Hunter D was produced digitally in a time when the equivalent technology was like a zip drive, a thing that was, you know, some basically like in the middle between advancements and not technology that anyone uses anymore. But
Like the first true digital anime was, you know, Ghost in the Shell, but they still had to print that thing to film.
Yeah, and well, that's what they did with Vampire Hunter D. They produced it digitally and then printed it to film, and so the result is basically like you are not getting like a 4K transfer out of a film copy of Vampire Hunter D, Bloodlust. Anyway, in spite of that, I thought the Blu-ray looked really good. I thought for what you get, you know, it's got a nice heavy grain on it, and there's not a lot of, like, the blurring is all intentional, and I didn't think it looked bad. I thought it looked good, which is really important for Vampire Hunter D Bloodlust because it has no other value other than looking fucking amazing. It has kind of no value other than that.
That's the thing about Kawajiri in general, is like fantastic character designer, fantastic action sequences, but that's what he does. He makes popcorn entertainment that is not going to really challenge you like in terms of like mental gymnastics or anything like that. But I think as far as like action and like just pure like this looks awesome, Bloodlust I think still holds up even 15 years
later. Yeah, well, it's still an entertaining film. It's just like I'm not looking for deep. I mean, what I'm looking for is like a character to care about, perhaps. But he doesn't give me one. Anyway, that's beside the point. The thing is, that movie, if you're talking about like gothic fantasy vampire imagery, I still think you can't do better than that film. And I don't think anyone ever really will in my lifetime. It is kind of the ultimate realization of that particular illustration style. Yeah. The Baroque, yeah, gothic, sort of bloody statues kind of thing. That movie,
yeah, Kikuchi was big into that.
It.
Plus, like, and if you look through the D novels, he's also kind of into the sort of cosmic horror. Plus, he's into Westerns. And so I think that, yeah, element figures into Bloodlust as well.
It does, yeah. But it's still really cool. I'm glad that Blu-ray is out.
Yep. I will point out that the culmination of that aesthetic in the film, where Dee and Meyer Link eventually have to confront the queen there, Camilla. Mm-hmm. That was Kawajiri's addition to the story. That was not a scene from the novel.
Oh, that's right. Like the best part of the movie is the,
yeah,
it's one,
yeah,
of those things where we live and I recently revisited both the original Vampire Hunter D as well as Bloodlust myself, and I kind of noticed the fact that now we live in an era where we can easily compare things against the source material. Like when I first saw the original Vampire Hunter D, I had no idea that this thing was something that had been going on for decades and that there was a book and all that kind of stuff. And now with Bloodlust, I can instantly digitally download Demon Death Chase to my tablet, yep, and read it.
And that's a 220-page book. You can read that thing in 4 hours.
Right.
Tidy little page turner. Yeah, there are now, I think, about 30 Vampire Hunter D novels, and more than 20 of them have been translated to English. And they do well enough for Dark Horse that they do about one a year. So they're eventually going to catch up with Kikuchi.
Hmm. Yeah.
I've gotten through about a dozen of them at this point. It's entertaining stuff. It's pulpy.
Right. Yeah, I don't know. Well, if that TV show ever comes to fruition, maybe I'll check out the books. Yeah, it's a cool disc. I'm glad it came out. It came with a nice slipcover and everything. I didn't get a chance to take a look at the extras, but yeah, I don't
know,
man.
How was the audio mix on that one? Like, I actually remembered asking about it, and I think I just went straight to the 2.0 version because my recollection of the 5.1 mix was that the effects were super duper loud and the, yeah, audio for the dialogue was really mumbly.
That
and
was,
they
that
fixed
was my
it
memory
for the 2.0 track.
Yeah, that was my memory too. And I'll be honest and say I've got the disc, but I haven't actually sat down and watched it yet, so I couldn't tell you that off the top of my head.
I had it on 2.0 and it sounded fine to me. So
yeah,
hopefully,
yeah, I recall like when it's not included on their version, but when the Japanese did their audio track, they did it in 2.0, and again the levels were fine. And so that was my one misgiving about listening to it in English, which is technically the original recorded audio, was just, you know, the audibility of it. But now that there's a stereo track for it, strange as it may seem, that may be the way that I recommend people watch the film.
Hmm. I'm not sure I'm going to get the original, the 80s one. I have no special love for it. In fact, I remember being kind of bored by it when I was a teenager when I first saw it. I should revisit it. It's been a really long time, but
it's one of those things where it was like nothing anybody had ever seen before back then.
Yeah.
And now in a different way, it's like nothing made today.
Right.
Yeah. It's, I remember something hugely campy and pretty entertaining. I'm probably going to pick that up when it goes on sale at Christmas.
If you have nostalgia for the dub, it's not on there. They redubbed the film.
Yeah. Yeah. The,
but I have no nostalgia for that dub, so I'm fine.
Yeah, nice. Apparently, like, the streamlined dub, either there was a rights issue or there was something wrong with the master, and it you know, they couldn't recover a good-sounding version.
Yeah, it's also tremendously comically inaccurate to the actual audio. Yeah.
But that's why we love it.
He's clever, but I won't return the castle until I've killed him. Yes, because you keep the fucking castle here in your pocket.
So other than that, the other thing I watched was, as we know, Code Geass, got through that finally.
Excuse me, it's pronounced Code Geass.
Whatever. I took enough shit for Code
Geass. Oh, yeah.
Code Geass, whatever.
I've lost so many friendships over, like...
That was impressive. So. It was impressive to watch the Anna Twitter sphere, like, get irrationally and bothered about, like, the weirdest shit.
Yeah,
about the discussion of that.
That was really bizarre. There was some really weird shit happening around that podcast. It did manage to get Code Geass trending, I think, for a little bit. But yeah, that's what I saw. Next we're doing Angel Beats, so I got to start that. And then I was planning on watching Symphogear because I keep hearing this is a really fun show that I should watch.
Oh yeah,
they lied. No.
So that's kind of next for me.
We're all kind of waiting for Symphogear G, like the second season that really ramps it up to show up on a streaming service. I think that's going to happen sooner rather than later, but it's just a hunch, you know? I just watched season one, and I enjoyed it pretty tremendously. I'm kind of impatient for that series, too. I'm not going to the Pirate Channel for that thing, all right? I'm not going to download torrents.
Yeah, it's depressing when you say, like, boy, I sure would like to watch that. And everyone goes, oh, well, I know. I'm aware you can pirate everything. I know that. Obviously, I'm not doing that. Otherwise, you wouldn't hear me say, gosh, I wish I could watch this. So that's kind of it for me. Mike, what have you been watching for anime?
Well, for anime, I guess I could talk a little bit more about Symphogear. The first season, it was sold to me as kind of, you know, an Idol Singer version of Gao Gaigar, and I think that's accurate. It has these huge, huge melodramatic, over-the-top character moments. A killer alien threat that's really scary and weird. The story is kind of patchy and mediocre. The image songs that they use during the battles are great. You know, if Initial D left you wanting more Eurobeat, only even cheesier and crazier, Symphogear has you covered.
Oh, excellent.
Yeah, I mean, and the main character, I absolutely adore her, Hibiki. She's this vulnerable yet really strong and fiery character. And the actress who plays her, Aoyuki, they all do the singing too, because these characters, when they go into battle, they're idol singers, so they sing while they're beating the shit out of aliens and stuff. And right. She's got this kind of weird, kind of quavery voice. It's like it's a bit ill suited to the genre, but that's what makes it cool.
Huh? Yeah, but it sounds good.
Yeah, I have a lot of people, like, you know, a lot of my really extreme Anna Twitter pals, like the ones who focus on anime and manga almost exclusively as their hobby. Yeah. They're huge diehards for this franchise, and they've just quietly trying to sell that show for years, and I think I'm ready to buy in.
Well, the third season is airing now, and it's wildly popular. It's selling really it's not on sale yet, but they have ways of predicting what's going to sell really well. And they're saying that Symphogear, the third season, is going to win the season for summer, which wouldn't be tough because there's.
Oh, now that I look at what it is, I was thinking of a totally different show, and I was like saying people were lying. I thought it was Sound Euphonium.
Oh no! Yeah.
No. Not to be confused at all. They are completely,
those shows are a little different.
Yeah.
A little bit. Just a little bit. They both start with the letter S.
Yeah.
Don't jump on me. I was not dissing on Symphogear.
Yeah. And one other thing I'll point out that's kind of cool about it, and it's becoming, you know, more common, but still entirely too uncommon. The lead character there is homosexual, and there's not much titillation. It's purely as a matter of fact that, oh yeah, she's a gay girl with a girlfriend. you know, at least there's none of that going on in season one. I don't know. Maybe they ramp that up in series two, but I thought that was cool.
Right.
Yeah. Other than that, I mean, for summer anime, all I'm really watching and keeping up on is Gangsta.
Yeah, there is no chance that anything in that narrative is going to satisfactorily resolve itself.
I'm sure it won't. I'm sure it's like I think you said on Twitter a couple of days ago. It's absolutely going to wind up with all right, and here's an infuriatingly open ending, and now go read the manga.
Yeah, and then when you go read the manga, you'll realize they kind of burned through most of the manga that exists in that short span of time.
Yeah.
I'm saving up Gatchaman Crowd's Insight, Ushio and Tora, and Rampo Kitan for binge watching.
Well, Rampo Kitan wrapped up today. I was kind of surprised, but I forgot it's Noitamina, and it started early, so it's only 11 episodes, so it ends 2 weeks before the rest of the season.
Yeah.
But we have Rebecca Silverman, who reviews the show for us. She seems to take it pretty easy on it. She wrote an editorial comparing the show to the original books, which I highly recommend everyone go check out. But nobody seems to like that show at all, so I can't tell if it's worth my time or not. Rebecca seems to think it's cool, or at least kind of middling, passable. Everyone else is like, this is garbage.
Yeah, it's like how my opinion versus the rest of the world's opinion of Ninja Slayer, so I'm right, I understand.
Yeah, I mean, I have plenty to say about Ninja Slayer. It's still strong as hell, but I am going to be doing a second half of the season review in a week or two, so.
Right. That's going to wrap up finally, right?
Yeah,
that's about three more episodes or so.
Yeah, yep.
Yep, the Trigger show that you guys like and very few other people.
That is correct.
Just did not grab people the way Inferno Cop did.
It has an intimidating barrier of entry. It's really unusual.
It's a very specific crowd that it's made for.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if we'll ever actually get around to it, but Mike, we tossed around the idea of an editorial where you just sort of explain, here's how you get the jokes in Ninja Slayer. Like, here's all the levels of irony you have to drill through in order to understand the jokes in Ninja Slayer. But the show is so unpopular that we sort of were like, well, we'll get to it when we get to it.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those, how much time do I spend rhapsodizing about Sho Kosugi movies and, more recently Scott Adkins movies?
Right, yeah, just in order to help people. But the idea was, to help people, okay, do you not get Ninja Slayer? Well, here's how you get it. You probably won't think it's funny after this has all been coldly explained to you.
Right. There's nothing less funny than explaining a joke.
Yeah, right. But just to penetrate the layers in that. But the show is so unpopular that I just was like, well, maybe we'll still do that, if there's a DVD or something. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of want to go in that direction. But one of the things I've been waiting for is for the manga to come out in English. And there are two manga series. One of them, Ninja Slayer Kills, that just came out from Kodansha Comics.
I have that, yeah.
Yeah, it's entertaining. It's got a wild art style, but storytelling wise, it's a very by the books interpretation of the novels. Apparently, the vertical one, the other series, I don't remember the title off the top of my head, is a lot. It turns the camp and the humor up a lot higher. So I'm curious to see what that's like.
Interesting. Yeah. All right. So anything else?
One thing I forgot to mention earlier is not anime, but animation. I also just watched Song of the Sea, the film from last year by Tom Moore. That's wonderful. So I think everyone should go and see that. If you kind of keep thinking, well, who's gonna be the next great animation film director now that Miyazaki is retiring? Keep your eye on that guy. Really captivating little movie about a subject matter you don't always see, like odd Irish folklore. That, and I saw The Congress. Did either of you guys see that film?
No, but I've heard
did
of
not.
Him.
No,
it's by the guy who directed Waltz with Bashir, which is an unusual movie itself because it's an animated documentary about war in the Middle East. But yeah, this new movie is it's a loose adaptation of a Stanislaw Lem story about Robin Wright basically playing a fictional version of herself who is presented with this offer from the studio. She was never as popular as she was supposed to be, so they're like, well, how about we give you one big payday and then we just scan you in and you can be our top line actress, but you don't have to work. We're just going to use your digital assets. And then it cuts to 20 years later where, because of that technology, we're now living in a world where everyone can realize these crazy transhuman visions and ideas and can recreate themselves. It's really disjointed, but I liked watching it a lot. It's cool to look at. It's seeing those films kind of back to back just left me thinking, man, we're living in a good time for animation fans. There's a lot of interesting stuff out there.
Cool. Sounds good. All right, Daryl, so what anime have you been watching?
Well, aside from what we've been talking about already, a lot of what I've been watching is for my impending Otaku USA deadline type stuff. So I've actually been following in the footsteps of you guys, as a matter of fact, because I am currently in the process of rewatching the original Full Metal Alchemist TV series, which is now, you know, over a decade old or thereabouts.
Yeah.
Because of the Blu-ray release.
Right.
And so looks fantastic, by the way, on Blu-ray. I was legitimately unsure if it was an upscale or if they remastered it. And I think, according to Justin, it was sort of a 50-50 kind of deal. He's the one who'd really know more than I.
Like they were able. It's not like it's not a 1080i deal. They were able to actually do an inverse telecine on it and make a progressive version of it. So it upscaled.
That's correct.
It upscaled very nicely.
And then additionally, I am doing a review of Expelled from Paradise, just recently released by Aniplex here. So that's a film by everyone's favorite, the Uro Butcher. I'm, of course, into it for the Ichiro Itano aspect of it. But, you know, it's just a 1-2 punch of Seiji Mizushima, because he's the director of both Expelled from Paradise as well as the Full Metal Alchemist TV series. And on top of that, to shift gears a little bit, I had to do sort of contribute to a sort of an Osamu Dezaki retrospective that we're piecing together, myself and a couple other contributors. So I took on Ashita no Joe. So that's a pretty good span of time that I'm covering with my anime picks.
Jeez. I liked Expelled from Paradise a lot. I thought that movie was very entertaining, had a nice, tight little science fiction story to tell. I was very entertained by it. I didn't think it was dumb or anything. The animation is a little distracting, but in terms of like CG anime, I think that's as close as they've ever gotten to making it look good. And it doesn't quite look good, but they got pretty close. I like that movie a lot. I think it's underappreciated, maybe, for what it is.
So I'll be writing about that in future issues. And then, of course, another thing I recently watched was for my podcast, because I guess people are out to get me at this point, because I said, well, to incentivize people to watch me play video games, I said, you know, I set up a little donations thing on my Twitch stream, and I said, okay, if you donate, whatever, you can say, hey, watch this. And some enterprising terrorist of a fan of mine donated like the lump sum entirely and said, you've got to watch Bento, which is, you know, recently released on Blu-ray and such by Funimation. And it was an interesting show to talk about. And I went into the full details of that in my own show, Anime World Order. So you can go over there right now and listen to that.
Don't people hate that show? Like, hate it?
Well, Mike Toole did say when he was doing his Worst Anime Ever presentation that it was something that people suggested to him as Worst Anime Ever.
Repeatedly. There were several different people where kept bringing that up.
Yeah, and I don't think it is by any means. For one, like, the budget is kind of just off the charts for what it is. It's an action comedy. It knows exactly what it is, but I can understand exactly why people would despise it. I just don't think like it is worth it. Like, when I looked at it at first, I was like, oh, I definitely don't need to watch this show, because it's like a million of these other shows. It's not that kind of show. But yeah, I spoke like 45 minutes of my life explaining that one in detail. So okay. I will spare you the details.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, if there's nothing else, we should go ahead and get to these Twitter questions, because we got quite a few of them here. Okay. Cyber Mormon wants to know which GOP candidate is the most moe. There's an obvious answer to this, right?
Trump!
Right, he's the one who's inspiring all the anime moe memes.
Yeah, I've gotten a couple of joke tweets out of that have been retweeted like more than 500 times. Yeah. I don't know, I'm not a fan of his platform, but I really like just walking around the house and saying Trump, 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 Trump.
Yeah, I guess so. I think I mean, I watched that whole debate last night, and I don't think there's. I mean, everyone else on stage is just so. They're all absolutely horrible.
it's really interesting, because that's the thing. It's like, you know, Trump is getting people interested because he's very good at being a guy on reality TV, and that's what this shit is.
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, they spent most of the time last night just fighting just fighting Trump, like just taking insults and throwing them back at him, and
not really doing a good job of it either, right?
No.
Like they'd throw rehearsed zingers at him and it just slapped them aside.
Well, and then the post debate, they kept saying like Carly Fiorina is the clear winner, and I'm like, man, I was watching something else because she just seemed to be like she doesn't have a shot.
Well, it's fascinating that the conservative powers that be kind of don't want Trump because they don't. Maybe they can't control him as much as they'd like.
So
they're kind of steering you towards other picks. But I mean, I'm just noticing as I watch all this stuff, one, the sinking realization that we got another year of this shit nonstop.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then the other thing that kind of got to me is the fact that back when I was 18, which was a lifetime ago, I deliberately was like, I'm going to register myself independent because once upon a time I thought, oh, well, there's no need for me to cast in my lot with one side or another. But man, for every presidential election in my voting lifetime, I've seen really what matters is the primary, because nothing at this point is convincing anybody to choose between one party and another at this point. You know, mm-hmm. You pretty much have decided if you're going to vote for one of the Republican candidates, or if there's no chance in hell that you're voting for any of these people, you're choosing, you know, either one candidate you like or from the party that you like, or you're not voting at all. In my case, I've never not voted at all, but it's like, man, really, if you want to decide what's going to happen, the primary seems to be the real vote at this point.
Yeah, I also am registered independent. I can't remember when I did that, but some years ago I registered as an independent. I was registered Democrat and I went independent. And I realized that was a huge mistake because now that just means you get fundraising bullshit from both parties all the time instead of just one.
Yep.
Yeah, I'll get like the DVDs of like the secret truth of the president and it's that sort of thing.
Well,
nothing.
The super annoying thing is that I gave way too much money to the Obama campaign in 2008. And so now Hillary's campaign is hitting me up. Like I get fundraising stuff the second they launch because I gave way too much money to the Obama campaign.
I had to spend. I did one phone volunteer shift for the Obama campaign in 2008, and I think I had to spend like a month just opting out of shit over and over to finally get to shake them off my tail.
Yeah, it's really irritating. I still get phone calls from the fucking DNC, and it's like, leave me alone. Leave me alone.
Yeah, that's why. Like, it's the same thing with public radio or any of that stuff. You have to just kind of figure out ways to donate such that they don't know it's you.
Yeah, it's weird. Anyway, we should move on here. Invalid Name asks, is there an anime, manga, or manga property you've always meant to get into but have never managed to? Jeez.
I feel like I really lost a lot of relatability to modern anime fans because I've never seen a single episode of like Pokemon or Bleach or some of these things that are just permeated throughout the culture that you really should probably know something about, and yet I don't.
The big one for me is Dragon Ball. I've tried several times. I've never been able to get into Dragon Ball.
I recommend just those movies, and you'll get, like, the spirit of Dragon Ball, if not, like, the...
I've seen them. I've seen plenty of Dragon Ball movies. I've tried to get into Dragon Ball several times. I've tried Kai. I tried watching just some of those earlier movies, and nothing grabbed me. It just moves too fucking slow. It just moves too slow for me, and I think that's one of those things where it's kind of like wrestling, where you kind of have to get into it when you're a kid.
I think that's one of those weird things. Like, a lot of the people who are into that now were not so much into it when they're kids. Or, like, they start into it kids, lapse for, like, a decade and change, then get back into it.
But the crucial thing is started when they were kids.
Yeah, like, maybe. Sometimes less so. I don't know. For me, it's like the things that I want to get into it, I want to know more about this. A lot of it is on the American animation side of things at this point, because to me, when I go to the anime convention, the most popular thing for the last several years has not been anything from Japan. It's always been like Adventure Time, or now it's Steven Universe, and these are shows that I haven't watched them, and I feel like I'm definitely missing out on where an entire generation is like drawing their powers from if I know nothing about these things.
Yeah, I would like to get into Steven Universe myself. I've only seen a couple of episodes.
Yeah,
I never watched Adventure Time. The one that I always think, oh, I'd like to get into that, but never can make time for, and let's face it, never will, is One Piece. Where it's I read the first 20 volumes of the manga. I saw the first 13 episodes of the TV series. I've watched a bunch of the movies, and I'm never going to get past that.
I saw.
Well, to me, I think that's getting into it sufficiently to understand the deal.
You think so? Well, and also, there is a new hope too for me reading, at least reading the manga. My 10-year-old nephew emailed me out of the blue last month to tell me that he's a big One Piece fan now. So, oh, good, I could just buy it all the manga for him and read it first.
Yeah, I got through at least 100 episodes of One Piece, maybe more than that, and read a bunch of the manga, and then fell off the wagon and haven't gotten back on. Now it's too far. Now it's too far gone.
One of those things where Weekly Shonen Jump makes you realize, hey, wait a second, you're not actually supposed to read any of these things sequentially in order, despite the fact that they tell you that it's chapter 840 whatever. The reason that there's all those flashbacks upon flashbacks and recaps in all these things is precisely to catch people up who just jump in from right there. And maybe it's infuriating for the people who are watching entirely all the way through, because it's like, god damn it, get to the point, Naruto. All right, we get the flashback to your friendship. But no, that's for the benefit of all the people who are like, I just want to jump in right here.
Right. Mm-hmm. Anything else? I mean, the big long-running Shonen Jump ones, those are sort of obvious answers.
Those are kind of obvious answers. I don't know. I mean, I always wish I was more into some of the 80s mecha stuff that I always hear about. Like, I have friends who are huge fans of SPT Lasner and never saw any of it. No huge desire to seek it out.
Yeah, Blue Comet SPT Lasner, it's something that I'd been watching recently, as a matter of fact, as part of panel work, because as a matter of fact, next week is Anime Week in Atlanta, and I've been doing this panel this year of what came out 30 years ago. And so it's 2015 now, so 30 years ago was the anime of 1985, of which Blue Comet SPT Lasner is one. And so that was a thing where it was like, hey, yeah, I never really saw that much of this, and I watched a little bit of it now since I was...
Did you watch any Elgaim?
Heavy Metal Elgaim? I could never get into the Bison Well anything.
Well, I mean, it's weird because it's like I'm a big fan of five-star stories, and a lot of ways that was a prototype of five-star stories. You know, at least Mamoru Nagano's half of it, but it's just I don't think that's a good show, man.
I think the same thing of Dunbine, though.
Oh, I like Dunbine in the end. It took a lot of willpower to get through that thing, but the last like 8 or 10 episodes are just bananas. In a really interesting way.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't include Elgaim in my panel because technically it was an 84 show, like when it started. And so,
Yeah,
I don't know. I don't have a strong desire to get into that stuff, so I guess it doesn't particularly count for me. The big one for me was always Gundam, and I did eventually get into it. So, I mean, I don't watch every single Gundam thing, but I found I like the UC stuff, so I watched the UC stuff.
Yeah, and of course, 85 was the year of Zeta Gundam, so...
Right.
I figured I didn't need to go back and rewatch that since I knew it well enough.
All right, moving on. You Dare asks, thoughts on the potential FLCL reboot? You know, whatever.
I never had an affinity for Furry Curdy because I wasn't a teenager when it came out. But that's another one where that is like the definitive anime for a generation of people that came like just after me.
Right. And so yeah, I don't know.
Like, I'm not like the notion of them bringing it back. It's not like, oh my god, I can't believe. Oh, it's just like you gotta have the pillows come back, or you know, like so many of the things that are rooted to like that era exactly when it came out are what like Furikuri is sort of like the litmus test of like not really what anime was, because there's not really anime like that. If you try to say like what else is kind of like that, and then you start looking at like, you know, Diebuster or whatever.
Yeah, I was going to say, for Footy Cootie did have a spiritual successor, and that was Gunbuster 2 or Diebuster. I liked Footy Cootie a lot. I enjoyed that greatly when that came out. I even owned the Japanese DVDs of it for a while, which had subtitles, which was a new thing at the time.
Right, remember that.
I think it's been 15 years, and if the will is there and they've got a good creative team, why not?
Yeah, sure. I just don't... I'm not saying whatever in terms of like, well, that's not going to be any good. It's just, okay, all right, what are you going to do? Like, we have no idea what even the story is or what they're going to thinking about doing with it. It's not like you couldn't do anything else with those characters or that character if they just bring back Haruko. There's more they could do. I don't necessarily need or want more Fooly Cooly. It's kind of perfect as it is. I loved it like everyone else did. But I'm not resistant to the idea of it. I just kind of don't care until I see something more. like some kind of design ideas or a story synopsis.
Yeah, it's like if they make it for today's generation, then why make it Fruity Curdy in the first place and not just something that was like its own thing unto itself? But if they make it for the people who remember it, then it's no longer going to have the spirit of, you know, adolescence about it.
Yeah, I mean, well, one thing that I thought was interesting, I didn't actually know this, but when talk of this remake or sequel or whatever started cropping up, I had multiple, you know, American animation buddies who just pointed out the whole, so why didn't Gainax want to do more of this in 2005 when apparently Mike Lazo of Cartoon Network offered them like a couple of $1 million to make more?
I'm guessing it's just the people who made it maybe had moved on.
Yeah, I'm sure that was the case. But yeah, I was just, you know, intrigued to learn that, oh, Cartoon Network actually made overtures to Gainax. They're like, can you make more of this, please?
Oh, yeah, because it was so big when it aired.
Yeah.
Thanks to the Adult Swim broadcast.
I feel like you could take Fooly Cooly and adapt it into a longer show. Like, it's pretty crammed. And, like, those six episodes are pretty tight. There's not a lot of fat on them. I feel like you could probably get more out of that, even if you just retold the story. I think it would be okay. But I'm not a purist. I don't, like, the thing I saw is the thing I saw. If you're going to iterate on that or change it or do whatever, so long as you don't destroy all copies, if you don't come to my house and take my original copy of the original thing, then you can do whatever you want. I don't care. Remakes don't bother me. Anyway, so speaking of sequels that maybe we don't need, or maybe we do need. Scotty415 wants thoughts on Pacific Rim 2 being canceled. I don't care. I didn't want Pacific Rim 2.
I was greatly looking forward to Pacific Rim 2, and they were talking about how they were going to do, like, cartoons and various other supplementary materials. It's one of my favorite movies in a long time, but if we don't get any more ever after that, I still got that movie, and I'm fine.
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to believe that they really would have topped the original film. So I'm okay with there not being more. I mean, as long as it heads off the possibility of what if the second one came out and it turned out to be terrible.
The thing is,
don't, like, act like it can't happen.
I made the thing on Twitter saying, like, well, Universal has decided not to lose a bunch of money on Pacific Rim. And I got a bunch of people saying, like, well, no, because it made money overseas. Like, the nerd There's a myth that Pacific Rim did so well overseas that it justified a sequel. And it didn't. It didn't at all. Pacific Rim did not break even worldwide.
Yeah, yeah. I actually look at it as, like, it's like this weird kind of 2010s version of what played out with Hellboy.
Yeah.
Where it's like the first one was this big studio movie, and it really just kind of made just enough money. But that was Hellboy was actually really lucky to get picked up by another studio and get a sequel.
Well, this is kind of the Guillermo del Toro story at this point. I mean, the reason that Pacific Rim 2 at this point isn't happening is largely because of a fallout between Universal and Legendary, but also because Guillermo del Toro spent, like, some crazy amount of money on Crimson Peak, which looks cool,
yeah.
But that movie's rated R.
Yeah,
and it costs like $200 million or something like that. So
you cannot make a $200 million R-rated.
Yeah,
movie.
I don't think it costs that much.
Unfortunately,
because
the R rating is where all the cool stuff is.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, well, I'm looking forward to seeing that movie. But Pacific Rim 2, like, I thought it was like, well, they're just going to lose money, and that movie is perfectly fine the way it is. I don't need to see. I'm not particularly excited about seeing those images again. Like, the big robot hitting the weird monster again. Like,
given that I love that 80s anime, I am all about the big robot hitting the weird monster
to
infinity.
Let me put you this way. I would be in line for Pacific Rim 2 on opening night. If it's not there, I also don't care. Like, that's kind of how I am about it. I would absolutely see that movie, and I'm sure it would be entertaining, especially if Del Toro made it. But I don't really care that it's not going to exist, and I thought it was weird that they greenlit it in the first place. It seemed like it was just being willed into existence by nerds that insisted that movie did better than it actually did. That's what it felt like.
Yeah, well, hey,
I would be all for more movies being willed into existence if that's what it took.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and what I was going to say is, well, you know, maybe we won't get Pacific Rim 2, but maybe Gaylan Hurd will finally will that Guy King movie into existence.
Yeah. Maybe. I mean, I knew a guy that was working on the Pacific Rim cartoon, and I wonder if he is no longer doing that.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, God.
Yeah. I should
think
ask
we know
him.
The same person.
I should ask him. But anyway,
yeah.
Similarly, Scotty415 also asks, does the Akira movie actually have a chance of happening, even if it turns out to be true Christopher Nolan is attached to direct? Okay, so...
I kind of hope not.
Well, so here's the thing. Here's the thing. If Christopher Nolan is seriously attached to direct that, that is the only chance Akira has it being made. Because Warner will let Chris Nolan do whatever the fuck he wants.
Like, and I knew a guy who was working on the pre-production concept art for the other Akira project when it was, you know, being chopped around, and that kind of was, you know, put the brakes on that. But I feel like no matter what, I feel the only way to really do an American sort of remake of Akira, you'd have to capture the rebellious unrest counterculture to society aspect of Akira, not just the psychics blowing up everything aspect of Akira. And the only way you could do that and have it be relevant to the United States is to make it about our socio-political and or racial divide. And that's not a thing you can do for a worldwide blockbuster that has to cost hundreds of millions of dollars.
Yeah,
we're just
right.
talking about the hazards of making an R-rated $150-$200 million movie.
Yeah, and I mean, my thoughts on Akira remain the same until, like, as with every live action anime movie, until there is a director, a script, a cast, and shooting has started. I don't.
It doesn't exist, and I don't want to even talk about it or waste like brain power on speculation, which I guess that's some people on Twitter's entire existence for.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't. If Chris Nolan is seriously thinking about making that movie, that's the only shot it has. It needs either him or a major fucking star who is still can still somehow open films. Like if Chris
not just
Pratt,
film, Zach, three
if,
films.
If Chris Pratt signed on to Akira, you might get that movie made. Might, but like Leo DiCaprio couldn't even get it off the ground. So I don't know.
What about Robotech, Zach? Is Leo DiCaprio's Robotech coming through anytime now?
Yeah, sure, whatever. I don't think any of that shit's ever gonna get made. I just don't.
Nope.
All right, moving on. Land of Obscusion asks, if there was a game like the Pinball Arcade, but for 80s Laserdisc games like Road Blaster or Cliffhanger, would you support that? Yeah, sure.
Road Blasters was a racing game. No, he's talking about...
He's talking about Road Blaster. That's a different game.
Yeah, different game. Yeah. For me, I don't think those Laserdisc games are worth preserving as games.
No, they're not.
They're worth preserving as much as the footage. And I notice even when they do re-release things like, say, the Dragon's Lair or Space Ace, they release them as a friggin' DVD or a Blu-ray, and they give you an option to just watch the thing through. Or if you're going to really insist on playing it, you do it with your remote, because the controls of those games on those Laserdisc era games really just amounted to, do you chapter skip yes or no?
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, I say absolutely. That stuff needs to be preserved and should be preserved in as good a format as possible. I mean, come on, just go to YouTube and look for Time Gal. Watch Time Gal. You will thank me. That stuff's really cool.
Right.
Yeah, there aren't
my idea of preservation, though, is just give me the animation.
Well, there just aren't that many of them. It was really limited. That was a really – you would have maybe like less than a dozen games in a collection like that. So I would imagine it would be – I mean, securing the rights would be a fucking nightmare. It's probably why no one's done it.
I mean, for some of them maybe. Like Cliffhanger, I don't think you could really preserve in its current form because the rights to that are splintered now. That's two different films.
Right. Anyway, so yeah, if that were made available, absolutely. But I would want it on Blu-ray as a museum of here's – you can just watch all this stuff. Not like as a game collection because those aren't games.
Right.
Steve Hennel asks, is there any hope of seeing Satoshi Kon's last unfinished film reach completion? We've been asked this several times.
Okay.
I think it just came up again. Oh, go for it, Mike.
I was going to say, someone I talked to over the summer had a really good answer for this, and that someone was an animator named Aya Suzuki who worked on the pre-production of this film. She puts it, you know, brutally but really well. The only way to finish this movie properly would be to resurrect Satoshi Kon.
Right.
The only thing that's been done is his storyboard, you know, the script, some art boards, and a little bit of early animation. You know, if you took those storyboards and turned them over to another team, you know, you might get a good film out of it, but it wouldn't really be a Satoshi Kon film. So, no, the only way to really finish that movie would be to bring him back from the dead. So we can't. Yeah.
What I want is a book that has the storyboards and the script in it.
Yeah, and I noticed, like, I just recently bought The Art of Satoshi Kon from Dark Horse, and I turned straight to the Dreaming Machine section, and it really only consisted of a few main character sketches and nothing else. And so I was, like, very...
That's almost all of it.
Yeah, that's basically, this is what exists.
There's a story, I mean, the script exists. So, yeah. Conceivably, and we could see the script.
I don't know if he actually finished the storyboards, but I've been told he finished the storyboards before he died. So, and I think that's been the horrible thing that's kept hope alive, which is like that's the most important part of pre-production is getting that storyboard done. So in theory, you could make a movie from that, but I don't think it's going
to
happen.
I don't want to see it. I don't need to see that movie.
Maybe if they released the storyboards with the storyboards script next to it and translated.
That's what I meant.
That would be the best way.
Yeah. That's what I meant. That's what I said. That's what I want. I want that. I don't want someone else to come in and try and make Satoshi Kon's final film. I don't think it's necessary. I don't think it would do it because the only thing you'd be doing is sitting there watching this compromised thing that isn't whatever it was supposed to be. So. Right. Give me the raw materials. I'll enjoy those, and as if by karma or whatever, the movie will exist in my dreams only, and that's one way to do it. let's see. Poogly Woogly asks, which company had the best promo reel for their catalog? Streamlines, state of the art Japanese animation ad, etc.
Yeah, I really like the manga KMFDM with Richard Epcar saying, "Manga!"
Yeah.
But no, my answer to that is a smart-ass one because it's not really part of that set of promo things. It's the Gaga reel.
Oh, yeah.
Daryl knows what the Gaga reel is. That's another thing you can find on YouTube. It's a sales reel for a whole bunch of mid-80s anime OVAs that have been drastically retitled.
Bubblegum Crisis was called Futurescape, and Project Deco was Supernova, and MD Geist was the Thunder Warrior.
Yeah. And yeah,
this is what I was talking, like the one time I met John O'Donnell, this is what I brought up, and he was like, nobody in this entire convention would possibly know what that was, but now you can, thanks to YouTube.
Yep.
I mean, I'm not for the content because it'd just be clips of fucking Spriggan and Blue Seed, but ADV Do It Now, the classic.
That is a classic, yeah.
Just
yeah,
the song though, not for the actual footage.
Yeah, no. Well, I mean, the footage would change from season to season, but the song, yeah, that was powerful stuff.
Generally, you no matter the reel though, you would always get the shot of the Spriggan guy throwing the knife into the camera. Always.
Yep.
Every time. along the same lines, Adven Curls. Something asks, if a Laserdisc fairy magically offered any series or movie on LD for your collection, what would you ask for? First, I want you to just...
I never owned a Laserdisc player since that was for rich people.
Well, hang on a second.
Yeah.
I want you first to describe the Laserdisc fairy.
Okay.
What does this
Laserdisc
look like?
Fairy is a bearded man.
Larry the Cable Guy.
Yeah, Larry the Cable Guy, maybe a little more obese. Like, he's wearing a shirt that's a little too small to contain his obese gut. And he's holding, like, laser discs in one hand and breathing, like, heavily, like, wheezing. Like, got some laser discs for you, kid. Like, that's the laser disc fairy.
All of his laser discs are Japanese language only Macross laser discs. That is,
yeah, the shirt is like a geek shirt with like an old print on it, but it's stretched out.
I'm gonna say handmade iron on from the 80s.
Are those laser discs CAV or CLV?
I don't know.
I don't even remember what that means.
I was just having this discussion because I reviewed El Hazard. I went back to that one and the laser disc discussion came up there. And yeah, CAV was the good one. Watch, I got it backwards because I can't remember my own show. But if I had to pick something, like nowadays there's way superior formats to Laserdiscs, but back in the day, the Laserdiscs that everyone coveted having were Five Star Stories, definitely a collector's item for its time, and Otaku no Video, because that was the way you could have the Daikon 4 opening, right? Those were like the crown jewels of Laserdisc nerddom.
Well, my answer is a cheat answer, but since he said any film... the movie I would gladly accept on Laserdisc is a 1968 movie from Daiei Films called Seshoseki, The Killing Stone, also known as Toby Maru and the Nine-Tailed Fox. It's a full-color fantasy 90-minute movie that, as far as I know, has never been released on home video in any form. If anyone has a copy, drop me a line, but I don't think you do. And I really want it. It looks good.
All right. I'm going to pass on this because there is nothing I would want to own on Laserdisc.
Yeah.
If he showed up at my house, I would tell him where the nearest used media store is. Although my local Book Off has big Apple crates full of Laserdiscs now.
Well, the real like only appeal to owning one is just for the packaging, like the really nice artwork.
Right. Yeah, the artwork's really nice, but I mean, then you got this thing.
I would not
want to
watch the thing.
Like, I would buy, like, if they just sold the sleeve, I would consider buying just the sleeve and framing it for like one movie. I would.
Yeah, that's
that.
That's what I've got with my giant robo laser discs.
Right. There you go. Good idea. Yep. Okay, Bunny Bookends asks, what upcoming non-franchise, non-superhero movies are you most looking forward to? So, this is the season. We're getting into the good movie season, and there's a bunch of stuff I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, we got Vin Diesel with a sword, definitely number one.
Yeah, right.
Then we
I forgot about that.
Then we got Legend, only this time without the unicorns or Tom Cruise. No, it's another gangster movie, and I'm looking forward to that.
They pushed that out of the way of The Martian, which everyone is saying is going to be fucking huge.
I definitely want to see The Martian, even though Ridley Scott has not made a good movie in over a decade.
I think it'll be good. It looks good. It looks like a crowd pleaser kind of movie. I'm excited about that. But the big one for me is, of course, Hateful Eight.
Absolutely.
I
realistically can spend much of Christmas just watching Westerns that are brand new and in the theater.
Yeah, The Revenant also opens then. I really want to see the Steve Jobs movie because it sounds crazy entertaining. They compared Michael Fassbender's Steve Jobs to Daniel Plainview from There Will Be Blood, and I was like, I have to see this right now. Like, that's amazing.
Oh, boy. Jobs as a vicious, amoral monster. Yeah, that does sound good.
Yeah, yeah. And they said Michael Fassbender just, like, eats the movie alive. They say it's amazing. I can't wait to see it.
Yeah. The only one you haven't mentioned, I know, Daryl, you're not a fan of the genre, but from what I've seen of it, I am looking forward to Goodnight Mommy. That looks like a genuinely creepy movie.
I don't think I've heard of this.
It's a horror movie.
Thanks. Yeah, I figured that out.
Well, yeah, I mean, the premise is, you know, that there are these two twin boys, and they're a little eerie, and their mother has an accident and goes away, and then the mother comes back, and her face is patched up and bandaged, and they're not entirely sure it's her anymore.
Oh.
And it just builds from that primal fear.
That sounds interesting. That sounds cool.
Yeah, the trailer is pretty scary stuff. I'm curious about that.
Someone just picked up Charlie Kaufman's stop-motion movie, and I want to see that. And yeah, there's a bunch of stuff. Like, it's festival season right now, so a lot of stuff is getting its first taste. A lot of the press is getting their first taste. A lot of the stuff. So this is the exciting part of the year for me, movie wise, because all the Oscar stuff starts rolling out, and it's when the studio puts out the stuff they think is actually good.
Yeah.
So I'm excited.
So definitely Vin Diesel with a sword. We can all agree
they've been advertising that shit since January. Like, that fucking Witch Hunter movie, I've seen that trailer in front of every movie for the last, like, 9 months. Anyway. Petpo asks, final verdict on Hideo Kojima, mad genius or just mad? He's a genius.
Genius, not even mad genius.
Yeah, he's a genius.
The stuff he makes is right up my alley throughout. I don't have any objections to the writing style or the gameplay. And I actually think, like, the reason they hold this guy up is because the stuff he makes, very much like Shinichiro Watanabe, it's like you can only make this if you're a guy who is like this omnivore of pop culture. Like, he doesn't just play games. He watches movies, both old and new. He reads books. He listens to music. And he takes all these little bits and pieces and throws them together and puts his own spin on it. And that's kind of like what these crazy, like, creative types really do. I wish he could go back to more Zone of the Enders, but I guess it won't be, but I'm sure wherever he ends up, he'll make something awesome. I don't think he's just mad or anything like that. And I don't think there needs to be a final verdict. I think he's got a lot more in him.
If I'm playing one of his games, something in it will blow my fucking mind. Something will. And there are very few people who make video games where I'm guaranteed to have my mind blown at some point, even if it's a small thing, by their game. So.
Yeah, and he's very good at knowing, like, what are experiences that can only be drawn out through the act of actively playing a video game.
Right, yeah. Totally. Zero Intelligence asks a joke question, but Mike, you didn't mention this when we were talking earlier. He asks, which Love Live member deserves to run their own presidential campaign? But you saw the film, which we just...
Oh, I sure did.
We just had Nick Creamer review it for us.
Yeah, I didn't see it. I'm going to be writing about my experiences with the franchise for the column soon. So you've got that to look forward to.
Okay.
I mean, who should run a presidential campaign? That's really just yet another version of who is best girl.
Yeah. Right.
That's the only question anyone asks with Love Live.
Yeah, no. My favorite character amongst those is one, that came to me purely through a weird backwards meme, and that's Rin Hoshizora, the short-haired kind of, bubbly athletic one.
Right. I'm surrounded by people who love Nico, and I didn't know anything about Love Live, and so one day I finally looked up, who the hell is Nico? Okay, she's the pedophile option one. Okay, now I know.
Nice. All right.
I like Nico because she's the Dunning-Kruger effect in action. She's utterly convinced that she's the most talented person on the stage, and no, generally she's the least talented, but she's the hardest working. She puts the most thought into her.
So the most moe. Because she's pedorific and she's not talented, but she tries real hard.
Yeah.
I understand now.
All right. Let's see here. Ben the Bear asks, what are your thoughts on Otakon leaving Baltimore? Will you miss the BCC? Or are you happy it's moving to a bigger space? I mean, everyone's happy it's moving to a bigger space.
BCC would be fine if they just made the friggin' skywalk from the BCC to the Hilton wider than a one single file stairway.
There's that. Well, two other things needed to happen to keep Otakon in Baltimore. One of them was building another wing of the convention center so they had room to expand. And the other one was knocking down and rebuilding the arena. Because the city has been planning to do that for years but would not tell the con when it was going to happen. And the con needs that space. They put the masquerade there, and if they have a big enough musical act, they put the concert there. So that's why Otakon left Baltimore. I love Baltimore. I like the Inner Harbor a lot. That whole neighborhood is really cool, but it's too small now. Even with the diminished crowd this year, it still really wasn't that comfortable. And the neighborhood they're going to is great. It's really cool.
Nice.
I'm looking forward to the last hurrah in Baltimore this coming year. I'm actually showing up on Wednesday to do some touristy stuff and kind of stretch it out as much as I can.
Finally go see that aquarium that we've been
walking
past.
That's right, yep. That's on the agenda because I hear that's a damn good aquarium and I want to go.
Yeah, it's a nice aquarium. I've been in there a few times.
Yeah.
It's not as nice as the West Coast ones, but maybe that's just my bias talking.
But yeah, I mean, it's like... It's a shame they can't stay in Baltimore. I'm sure the city would love them to stay and needs them because they generate millions of dollars in income. But all things.
We'll see if KatsuCon does similar.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just excited that there's going to be a con that I can reasonably go to for work that will be in a city that I've always meant to visit and have never visited. So I'm excited to see Washington, D.C. When it eventually goes there. I'm really happy it's getting out of Baltimore. I always have a terrible time. Like, the convention itself is fine. My experience surrounding that con with the city is always pretty bad. So I'm kind of looking forward to it getting the hell out of there. Jeff Tebbets, your friend of mine, asks, so this is from the debate that was on last night, but he wants to know, and a couple people asked about this, what anime character, living or dead, is on the would you put on the $10 bill?
And this originates out of a question that was asked at the GOP of what woman would you put on the $10 bill? And a good 50% of the respondents didn't know, like, any famous Americans to put on there. So that was interesting.
One guy said Rosa Parks, and then everyone else was like, Rosa Parks.
Yeah, of course. Chris Christie was like, Abigail Adams. And it's like, John Adams. What? Damn. And everyone else was just like, completely lost. But as far as anime characters, is that what that was the figure? Like, what anime characters do we put on the 10 spot?
Yes, that's what
gotta
it
gotta be. Nabiki Tendo. Maybe she deserves to be on the hundo.
God,
that's a good answer.
That is a good answer. Rosa Parks.
Yeah, Rosa Parks, the anime character.
I don't know. I mean, on the one hand, I think Cutie Honey would be a good one. She's always a perennial choice of mine to be on anything. Maybe Angel from Angel Cop.
Yes.
I mean, she's a member of the Special Security Force.
Correct.
She's got the credentials.
For some reason, it would make me really happy if Goku were on the $10 bill. I don't know why. It just would. It would make me really pleased. All right. A few people asked if anybody has seen the new Lupin the Third yet, which is it airing in Italy now? Is that on TV?
Yeah.
What happened was it airs in Italy in both the Italian and the Japanese, and the only way to see it is to steal it. And so I'm just waiting.
Okay.
Same. Yeah. No. I mean, I don't really pirate stuff anymore, man. Sorry.
Yeah. Me neither. I've seen like screenshots. It looks fun. I don't know if, I mean, I'm sure Lee Crunchyroll will probably grab it at some point. Depends on who, because that show was like produced for Italian television, right?
Yeah, it's like a co-production, I think.
So it's, that'll be up to whoever in Italy like wants to,
And since we pretty much have to say this, I am also going to point out, I'm not looking down my nose at the people who pirate anime, because there's still a lot of people around the world who can't get it any other way. I'm just saying, it's like, no, I'm in an ecosystem where I kind of don't need to, so I'm just biding my time and waiting.
Yeah, maybe it would be better. The better phrase maybe is like, I don't have to pirate things anymore, so I don't.
Yeah.
I understand some people feel like they do, or in situations either globally or financially, where if they want to watch the stuff, they have to pirate it. I understand I'm not judging you. I'm just saying I am in a position where I don't have to, so I don't.
I'm just confident that it'll actually come out. And so there are like still some edge cases where, it isn't licensed and it isn't being streamed or anything like that. And the only way to see it is through fan sub efforts. But honestly, even the people who fan sub stuff now ignore that stuff by and large.
Yeah.
So I'm just figuring I'm confident enough that Lupin the Third is a big enough thing that it's going to end up somewhere officially. I don't know where. Maybe Hulu, like how Daisuke Jigen's Gravestone. But who knows?
I mean, it's at this point, it sounds to me like this is an issue where whoever winds up getting that for global streaming or whatever has to work with the Italian production company that, and we have no idea whether or not Italian television is one of those things that.
What if Harmony Gold gets it?
Yeah, there you go. Then we'll never see it. All right, One Side Seven wants to know, Mike, how does Anime North differ from US Con?
Well, its physical layout kind of has a slightly different feel. It's spread out between like a small convention center and a big ass like hotel that absorbed three other hotels. But between that is this vast parking lot. So it has this kind of festive parking lot culture to it. They'll throw dance parties and concerts and stuff out there. That's where the bulk of the cosplayers hang out if the weather's good. I would say that it draws the crowd of a top tier anime con, and it has some anime guests, but it's a lot of the cons that I've been to, it's more of a generalist thing. Like Anime North was the first anime con I went to that had like its own amateur pro wrestling thing set up.
Huh.
It's that kind of con.
Interesting.
It's definitely a little different, but you know, if you want to go to the anime con for the anime con, no, they service that pretty well too.
Is it different from U.S. stuff in the way that Canadian stuff is different from U.S. stuff? Like,
pretty much like what it is here, only a few days older? No.
A few days older, everyone's a little nicer.
Yeah, everyone's a little nicer, and let's see, the exchange rate is good, which I mentioned that to my Canadian friends, and they get mad because everything costs more for them. Mm. But one thing that I love about that con, you can't really replicate that at another one, is that the DoubleTree Hotel that hosts it, they have a Japanese restaurant run by Japanese Canadians in there, and every convention they'll set up stalls at the front where they just sell rice balls and takoyaki and like festival snacks.
Huh. Nice.
And you know, it's all really good stuff, fresh ingredients, really authentic, and they make a killing. Like they'll have a line 150 people long for the whole weekend by buying these $4 snacks. I'm 100% confident that like that family put all of their kids through college just on that money.
They're charging $4 for a rice ball?
$4 for a very big... It's one of those, it's like, if you spend $12 Canadian, which at the moment, that's about $9 or $10 American, you can get two big-ass rice balls and a takoyaki or like a chicken skewer.
Eh. Pretty overpriced. But the convention prices, I mean, that's more expensive than the overpriced...
It's either $3 or $4, man. I don't know. It seemed like a good deal to me.
I'm comparing it to the overpriced izakaya across the street for me, and the overpriced izakaya is cheaper.
Whereas down where I live, izakayas don't exist.
Yeah, there you go. Wow, yeah. Florida. That's what you get. Let's get to the final question here. Kaylin Evergreen asks, will we ever see the Evangelion Blu-ray set stateside? Somebody's going to pay for it.
Yeah, eventually.
Somebody's going to pony up the probably millions of dollars
that they
would have to in order to get that. I saw the end of Evangelion Blu-ray. Fucking glorious. It looks really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that movie has a big glow to it, so it's maybe not as immediately obvious that it looks a hell of a lot better than that old Manga Entertainment DVD, I'll tell you that.
Damn.
That's a really nice box set. Justin has it. It's gorgeous.
a lot of my friends sprung for it, because like after all the discounts and stuff, it was around like what, $300?
Yeah, $300, which is still, I cannot justify $300 for a box set with no English subtitles. I can't do it.
For just one movie at that.
I would want the show. I'm a big fan. Obviously, that's one of my all-time favorite. Like, I'm a huge Evangelion fan, but that will come out here eventually. And I'll buy that version.
But one episode is upscaled.
Yeah, well, they don't have the...
Yeah, the film was destroyed. Yeah. It happens.
So long as I know the production process, I just don't get upset about Blu-ray stuff, like quality stuff anymore, just because the odds, unless the people making it were truly incompetent and didn't know what they were doing, and Justin's helped like enlighten me about this stuff a lot. Like, generally, if there's a problem and it wasn't incompetence, it's just a result of the materials, especially with anime. It's just a result of the materials, and there's nothing you could have done about it. So that's the way that's as good as it's ever going to look. I hope it does. I'm sure it will. I just don't know who's going to pay for it. Funimation has the money, so maybe they will. But I don't know. We'll find out.
Maybe Twilight Time will get the rights to it, and it'll be a limited edition, 200 copies only made, you know, limited two. So if you don't get your pre-order in the first 20 minutes, you're going to have to pay over $1,000 for it.
Yeah, and MSRP on it is $700 or whatever. Yeah.
Hey, man, Twilight Time is releasing the CG Captain Harlock movie in December, and I'm probably going to get that just because, yeah, the movie is a kind of middling, but those guys do really good, Criterion-level quality Blu-ray releases.
They do. I came so close to buying their release of Zardoz and then just couldn't bring myself to drop $40. I couldn't.
For the tremendous John Boorman commentary track.
Yeah, $40 for Zardoz. Like, I just can't make ironic purchases that are that expensive anymore.
You can buy the DVD.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's partly the, I like the presentation, and it's also partly the notion of, oh, well, I can get this Harlock movie for $40, and then in 2 years when I kind of need the money, I can sell it for $85.
Will somebody really want that CG Harlock movie?
Oh, dude, I guarantee all of Twilight Time's releases sell out, you know, because they do these small runs. They estimate what the demand is like. They manufacture to that spec, and it's gone.
Twilight Time, their production runs and everything basically created a market around Twilight Time releases.
Yeah, it's weird.
Okay, so just for somebody who purely wants to collect all the releases, those are your potential candidates for buying a secondhand Space Pirate Captain Harlock CG.
There's a Twilight Time cult. Like, if you go to the Blu-ray.com forums, there's people that just love to collect their releases.
Which means they paid $40 for Zardoz.
Yep.
Okay. Anyway, all right. That actually wraps us up, guys. Thank you so much for coming on. It's always great fun having you here. So thanks a lot.
Oh, fantastic time. Oh, you didn't get to ask us what our favorite Monster Girl was. Oh well.
Well, the thing is,
our favorite Animator Expo short.
While that show is on, we now get that question for every
every single episode.
If you guys want to tell me your favorite Monster Girl, you can go ahead.
I've never seen a single episode.
Neither have I. I was going to do a bullshit answer, to plug some of the shit I'm into. No, my favorite Monster Girl is a Little Mermaid from the Toei film.
Okay, Mike.
I'm biased. Hey, man, you get to see her boobs, too, which is actually pretty weird because that's like a family movie and she's supposed to be 15.
Yeah, but it's, anime. So,
yep,
of course.
Exactly.
So, of course, that's in there. Anyway, all right. Thanks a lot, guys. Okay, that's our show. Big thanks to Mike and Daryl for stopping by. The theme song is Bucharest. It's by the band The New Division. You can check them out at newdivisionmusic.com. Don't forget, subscribe to us on iTunes. Leave us a rating or review. We'd really appreciate it. And I'll see y'all next week.